Welcome back to the program. Evan Bray, great to have you here on this Tuesday morning. Well, this story has been interesting. I've been following this along. A recent court ruling in British Columbia has raised some new questions about the security of private property ownership in Canada. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm overstating that, which is exactly why we've got my next guest coming on. But this decision, stemming from a case involving Indigenous land claims, suggests that Aboriginal title could take precedence in some circumstances, even over land held under traditional private titles. So it's, as you can imagine, it's caused concern for homeowners in the affected area in Richmond, BC. Letters have gone out warning property owners that their rights might be impacted. As soon as I started reading this, trying to unpack it, I realized this is a case for Dwight Newman. This is where we have to bring in Professor Dwight Newman, who is a constitutional law expert, University of Saskatchewan's College of Law. He's the Canadian Research Chair in Rights, Communities, and Constitutional Law, and we always appreciate having him on the program. Dwight, thanks for taking my call.
Good morning, and glad to be with you.
It probably sounded like a call of desperation where I'm saying, Dwight, I need a little bit of help on this one. So can you just set the stage for this conversation? What has unfolded in BC and this ruling with the BC Supreme Court?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone needs a bit of help with it because it's a 800-page long decision and so on. But just to be clear, it's a decision of the BC Supreme Court, which is the name in British Columbia for the equivalent of our Court of King's Bench. It's a trial-level court, and it is a decision that's being appealed. But the BC court ended up saying that there's Aboriginal title ownership of an area within the city of Richmond. They specifically made an order for federal land in that area and city of Richmond land in that area to be transferred to the First Nation making the claim, and with a period of time to sort that out. They didn't make that specific order against private land within this area that they said was Aboriginal title land, but they did say Aboriginal title extends over that area, and because the city of Richmond land was owned in a similar way as private land would be, they made comments that would seem to have concerning effects for private land within the area affected, and at a precedential level for private land elsewhere too, maybe. But
so, I have so many questions about this, but let's go back to if this is deemed to be Aboriginal title property, who then sold the property without the right to sell it, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, Aboriginal title arises as a property claim in places where there was no treaty selling that land or ceding that land from the First Nations to the Crown. So it's a very different situation than in Saskatchewan, just to be clear. And so listeners don't have to get worried instantly unless they own property in BC. Then they can worry a little bit. So in essence, the province of British Columbia came into gradual existence as a colony. It ended up giving out Crown grants of that land that now is said to be subject to Aboriginal title because it was never properly ceded to the provincial government. There have been various transactions, obviously, with that land over time between people who may not have known anything about it after a certain point. And there might be a defense some of those people can assert down the road if you're what's called a bona fide purchaser for value, meaning sort of an innocent person who bought land not knowing there was another claim on it and you paid for that. That might be a defense for landowners, but whether that holds up against a constitutionalized right of Aboriginal title isn't clear. The biggest problem coming from the decision is there's a lot of uncertainty on the impact on private landowners, and the judge makes a number of comments that actually suggest Aboriginal title might take priority over private land in this area that's been subject to Aboriginal title, where that got transferred out by the provincial crown over time.
Dwight Newman is my guest, our constitutional law expert. Of course, he's a professor at the University of Saskatchewan. So when we talk about, your comments well taken about the fact that this is not a problem, this is not an issue people will face if they are in treaty territory somewhere in Canada, as we know it is our province falls under, correct?
Right. Saskatchewan is all within numbered treaties, and so there wouldn't be this kind of issue with respect to claims by First Nations. Métis groups were not part of the treaties, so some have some claims, but none of those have gone anywhere in terms of court recognition of those. And then there were a few First Nations that weren't part of the treaties, Dakota communities, but there have been newer negotiations with them. Like, there's been a recent treaty reached, in effect, or a self-government agreement reached with the Whitecap Dakota, for example. So in Saskatchewan, you don't really have the same issue as in British Columbia.
How big of a challenge could this be? And I use the word challenge for lack of a better term. For other parts of Canada, are there lots of areas that are watching this closely because it could have an impact in the location that they're at as well?
It's a BC decision, so it doesn't directly affect those other places, but as a precedent or as a possible conclusion the courts come to, I think other places are watching this to a degree. There are big parts of Ontario where there could be Aboriginal title claims, parts of Quebec. The Atlantic provinces are the Maritimes in particular, in sort of a special situation because they do have treaties from the mid-1700s, but those treaties don't have an explicit land surrender clause that looks the same as in later treaties. And so there's actually two Aboriginal title claims now over the entirety of New Brunswick, because it's basically that do claim against private land, because it's basically mostly private land in New Brunswick. There's not much Crown land. And so there's a case working its way up there. We'll probably hear from the New Brunswick Court of Appeal in the coming months. But yeah, other parts of Canada need to be watching this as well. And to the extent impacts on all of Canada, we need to be watching it even from here. Because if there are findings that that private land is subject to Aboriginal title, but the landowners get to keep it, well, maybe there'll be some compensation for that, and it might not come just from the British Columbia provincial government. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. We don't really know all the answers at this point. So,
I feel like every answer you give, I've got 20 more questions, but I wonder, is there likely, as a result of this, regardless of where this shakes out, we know it's being challenged in court right now, is there likely proactive work in other unceded parts of Canada to try and prevent this from happening?
Well, in some ways, there has been for decades the effort to reach modern treaties where that has moved forward is one way of resolving land claims. And there are a lot of modern treaties, more so than people may realize, especially across the Northern Territory, say, where those are perhaps easier to reach. There may be other proactive steps that that some try to take, and I've raised a couple of possibilities in op-eds over the last 2 months, whether this big legal question should be referred up to a higher court sooner than later is one possibility I raised. There are some other possibilities using special legal tools where one might try to get to some legal certainty quicker, but it remains to be seen if anyone will pursue these kinds of steps. I guess trying to negotiate things where that can be done has been one of the steps that's been ongoing.
I have not read the 873-page decision, as you highlighted off the start of our chat, Dwight, but I do wonder, there's the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Has that played into this at all? Was that a factor in the justice's decision in this case?
Not that much. There are some brief references to British Columbia's legislation related to that United Nations declaration, but they actually don't have much effect within the decision. The decision is based on Canada's doctrine of Aboriginal title and trying to follow out where that leads. The UN declaration could yet shift things later. There's some pretty lively different paths that some lower courts have been taking with the UN declaration lately, and it remains to be seen what happens on appeal. There's three particular cases I'm watching in that regard that will be telling, and we'll have to see where that goes. And this, again, the status of that is different in different parts of the country. There's federal legislation on it. There's British Columbia legislation. There's legislation in the Northwest Territories. Other provinces haven't adopted legislation. There may still be other ways it impacts the law, but we're going to get some guidance from some upcoming court decisions that we could talk about in future.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Dwight, I'm wondering, is there a middle ground? Is there somewhere between, yes, this is Aboriginal title land versus the status quo stays, so it rules in favor of, the way that the current land ownership looks. Is there a possibility of something between those two, or is it really come down to an either or?
So on the private property, there's a little bit of an either or in some ways. Although, to be clear, the First Nations said they weren't trying to pursue the private property. And so I think they claim to be as surprised as everyone else by aspects of this decision. That there would continue to be Aboriginal title claims that results in some transfer of Crown lands. That's a middle ground of sorts as compared to something where there's private property being transferred. Or can Aboriginal title and private property exist in the same place? It gets difficult because both are claims to exclusive ownership, but people are trying to think creatively around different possibilities, and maybe we'll still come up with something. There are various kinds of middle grounds between different really extreme scenarios that people could envision, and I think there's lots of people trying to work on this, and we'll have to see where it goes.
Dwight, I feel like I could take you on about 10 other journeys on other constitutional topics, but for today, I think we'll leave it there. I appreciate you joining our program.
Okay, thank you.
Dwight Newman, constitutional law professor at the University of Saskatchewan's College of Law. So, this is big. This is interesting to follow along. As you heard Dwight say, it does not apply to us here because our province is covered by treaty agreements. This really does pertain to areas of the country where it is seen as more unceded territory, not covered by treaty, whether it's one of the original treaties or more subsequent modern treaties that have attempted to be struck. I know there's lots of people with thoughts on this, and I will go to the phones and the text lines in just a moment when we come back to hear your thoughts, your suggestions, your worries about this decision and what it could mean. 1-877-332-8255. And as always, we will keep our comments respectful. I have no problem with passion. I have no problem with opinion, but we need to keep it respectful, and we will be back with your thoughts here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.